the sound of a nuclear weapon. Will there or won't there be that sound? Zelensky clearly won't. They're going to have to make a deal and pay the little creep off or kill him with a hypersonic missile hit. So they're going to have to do something. He is trying hard to start a major war. He knows when this war is over, he's over. So that's not good. And the way the British are acting, it's like they're not playing with a full deck of cards, not even half a deck. You don't try to incite war with Russia with 75,000 troops. It doesn't happen. But that's what they're yelling about. And Macron is another nutcase. It's crazy. All right, let me take a look here and just read two or three of these quickie headlines. If I can find them. They have to do with the fake Pope. Pope Bergoglio, if I even dare. He's been in the hospital 8 days. They're saying his condition is slowly worsening. There is now talk from the Vatican of forcing him to resign from office. It'd be funny, wouldn't it? That's what they did with the real Pope. They forced him to, and they lived the last 9 years of his life, Pope Benedict XVI, basically imprisoned in the Vatican. So the fake Pope, if they're talking out loud about forcing him to resign, they're getting ready for a change, obviously, probably much more than ready. And it's going to be interesting to hear what Father Kramer has to say about this. Welcome back, Father Kramer. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you quite well. And the developments are beginning to become very interesting at this time, because although we see where the general trend is leading, what will be the coming events in the very proximate future, we can only guess at this point. Mm-hmm. But one thing is certain. Bergoglio has very little time left in this world.
Well, he's going to step into the elevator and head down, would be my guess.
It certainly seems that way, because the man is without remorse as far as his opposition to the religion revealed by God.
Right.
The prophets
That's
and the apostles.
Well said. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Even though he's at death's door, he's planning to have a great ecumenical gathering, a meeting with the, the followers of the crescent moon, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, is he really? Okay.
Yes.
And he's going to attend this meeting, so he's going to call it quickly, apparently.
I don't remember the official title, but the Islamic Patriarch of Paris, or whatever they call him, has issued the invitation, and Francis Bergoglio responds by convoking this meeting. I don't know where it's going to take place, but I do know he plans to go to Turkey in May.
It's pretty optimistic, wouldn't you say? He's fragile and not out of danger, says the Catholic news agency. Fox News says, on the other hand, Pope Francis is just fine. He's not in life-threatening condition at all. That's what his doctors say. So there are multiple views of this man who is obviously on the way out. And if he's thinking of being around in May to attend a big conference, then that's kind of interesting.
Well, he's.
What is he suffering from? Do you know? I don't know.
It's an infection of the lungs. It's a respiratory infection. It's the lungs. It's multiple microbes are causing
He's got pneumonia. Of sorts.
He's got pneumonia. Yes.
Well, Maybe he
But
was injected with the COVID shot.
It's not a simple case of pneumonia because he's again there are multiple microorganisms causing this
oh, he's
pneumonia.
Got
So it's not
double. No, they call it double pneumonia. I understand. And yeah.
So it's not just the pneumonia bacterium causing this illness. It's multiple microbes causing it.
Yeah, and it's also known as double pneumonia. Okay, all right. Well, he's 88. And he's been around far too long already, in my view, and the view of many others. So the sooner the better. Goodbye. But then we got to worry about my ticket is punched for Freddy the Tyrant Fernandez. I think he can't be counted out yet. You can count him out later. But I think he's a real plotter, that guy. You know better than I.
I cannot venture to predict who will be the successor of Bergoglio.
Right.
There are various possibilities that what could happen, and it cannot simply be assumed that there will be one man elected. It happened in the year 1130. There were two men elected.
Huh.
I discussed this a little bit last time we talked, but the interesting fact was this, that Pope Honorius II had appointed eight electors. They could not all get together in time for his at the time of his death. Now, there are various reasons why six of the eight gathered together in the conclave and elected Pope Innocent II. I think one of the electors was Cardinal Pier Leone himself, who was the main reason why Honorius had designated the eight electors, because he knew that Cardinal Pier Leone was had close ties with the Jews. He was himself of Jewish ancestry, and with the Jewish money that he had at his disposal, that would influence the election to put Cardinal Pier Leone into the papacy. So
those two words always go together, sooner or later.
Pier Leone,
Jewish and money.
Pier Leone, of course, had no intention of attending that conclave because he knew he was not going to win it. He knew that the deck was stacked against him. And I think the cardinals knew that the six of the eight cardinals who were designated by the Pope to elect the successor, they were aware of the fact that events may be steered in such a direction as to prevent them from having their conclave. So when the Pope died, they quickly gathered together and elected Innocent II. And later that same day, Pier Leone and the other cardinals, the much larger number of cardinals, the majority of cardinals, elected Cardinal Pier Leone, who took the name Anacletus II.
What was it? What name did he take?
Anacletus.
Anacletus? I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
That's an odd one.
Yeah, there are not too many popes with that name, but that's the name he took, and the interesting thing is, of course, that the Church has recognized that Innocent II was the true and valid Pope, and Anacletus, although elected by the much larger number of cardinals, was the anti-Pope, the imposter.
Right.
Now, the interesting thing is this: the larger number of cardinals that elected Anacletus, or antipope Anacletus, their justification for calling that conclave was an expert canonist who had explained why, in his opinion, the election of Innocent II was not valid. So you had perhaps the most preeminent canonical scholar of the day explaining that the election of the Pope was invalid. So they gathered together in an invalid conclave and elected an anti-pope to oppose the true pope, who was Innocent II. So oftentimes I hear Catholics who are saying that, well, if you have legitimate doubt about the person, you've got to wait for the cardinals, or you've got to wait for the church authorities to make a declaration. You can't judge this on your own. But when all the church authorities are divided, or if the majority are falling away from the Catholic faith, there is no body of church pastors that one can trust for an honest, objective, and valid judgment. And this is, I think, this is the proof. We have history proves to us that the majority of the cardinals were wrong in their judgment, and the most preeminent canonist of the day was wrong. They said the election of Pope Innocent II was wrong, was invalid, and so they held that the election of anti-pope Anacletus II was valid, and he took over the papal palace in Rome, and the true pope Innocent II had to flee from Rome for some time. So Anacletus lasted something like 8 years, and finally it was his successor who was prevailed upon to resign, and that ended the schism.
So there was a rebellion at one point, and an overthrow of logical and correct ascension to the papacy by frauds. Okay, it's not the first time then. This time, interesting.
So the church's theologians and canonists, they're unanimous on this point, and it was also the teaching of a canonized saint, Saint Cajetan, the founder of the Theatines back in the 16th century. Who explain with the greatest canonist of the 20th century, a man by the name of Franz Xaver Vance, that if one has legitimate objective evidence, or one has what we call positive doubt, so there is it's not just suppositions, but there is probable cause for doubt that a man is a valid pope, that his election was valid, or that, for example, that the man is a heretic, or he's not capable of holding the office.
Right.
Then one is not bound in conscience to accept that man as pope, to accept his jurisdiction. One may withdraw submission to such a claimant. So,
are we talking about individual members of the church? Are we talking about the upper level?
We're talking about individual members of the church to make a judgment of conscience. Huh. That if there is legitimate doubt, which is to say positive doubt, based on probable cause, based on evidence, action, one is not bound to accept that man as the pope to be the superior, who has a legitimate authority to issue commands to the Catholic individual, to the Catholic faithful.
Got it.
And this is explained by Vance and all the great canonists of the 20th century. And the Code of Canon Law itself says that the interpretation of canon law must follow the explanation, the commentaries written by the great canonists. So, you have the approved canonists of the Roman Church at the Pontifical Universities, And when there's a consensus among the among these great canonists and their approved commentaries of canon law, their interpretation is to be followed. And that is the interpretation. So when there is doubt, when you can show that there's a legitimate reason to doubt that this man is a valid pope, you have the right in conscience to withdraw submission from and not recognize that man as pope.
Got it.
You as a Catholic don't have to accept him.
Mm-hmm.
And you are not guilty of schism. You are not a schismatic. You're not guilty of the sin, the crime of schism. You have the right to make that judgment. And this is the teaching of the Catholic Church.
All right. I wonder, was this recently, in the last several years, taught to the faithful around the world that you have that right? If you don't like this pope, you don't have to accept him.
Unfortunately,
I wonder if that was even mentioned.
Unfortunately, there is this uncritical legalism that has taken over they will say, this man is the pope, and if you don't accept the authority of the pope, then you fall into schism and you're a schismatic and you're outside of the Catholic Church. Well, that's an oversimplification. This kind of thinking is a form of fundamentalism. It's a fundamentalism that is not capable of making the proper distinctions that a more scholarly, objective understanding of canon law and Catholic teaching in general that is to be applied in such cases. It's the issue is more complex than these people will present it in their oversimplified, simple black and white understanding of a question.
Hmm.
Whereas the complexity of the issue is laid out in the commentaries of canon law, but that's been lost upon our present generation of most professors and scholars who. Right. Who just have not examined the matter sufficiently in depth to come up with a conclusion that matches what the Church has taught over the centuries.
Right. I have an email here. Someone wrote it last time. Let me try and duck it in here. It kind of fits. We're talking about schisms as well. The great schism or schism, however you want to pronounce it. Of 1054, you remember this one? The schism of 1054, the break of communion between the Catholic Church and the Eastern Orthodox Church, which happened in 1054. Any thoughts on that? Any idea of healing that schism?
Yes, it's going to be healed. It is an oversimplification to say that schism took place in the year 1054. In the year 1054, of course, there was the reciprocal excommunications issued by the Pope against the Patriarch Michael Carolarius, and they excommunicated each other. So you had the Pope and Patriarch excommunicating each other, but. This regards these actions juridically would intend to inflict a penalty on individuals. It's not churches separating from, that's not the act of churches separating from each other. And there was, materially speaking, there was already quite a rift between the Greek Church and the Roman and the Roman Church, the Eastern Church and the Western Church in general. The Eastern Church centered mainly, of course, in Constantinople. So this schism was already existing, even if it had not been formally declared. It was already de facto quite a visible separation between the churches. It was aggravated by this act in 1054, but what formally finalized the schism. I think it was, as some scholars will point out, historians, church historians will point out, that it was at the time of the Council of Florence. So we're talking about the early 1400s, around 1430 or so, 1431. I can't remember the year exactly around that, in that time frame. They drew up the documents for the reconciliation between the Greek church and the Roman church. But the rank and file of the Greek church rejected the union. And that is really what brought about the finalization and the hardening of the two sides into formally a schism between the two, between the Roman church and the Greek Orthodox church.
All right, very interesting. I hope that answers the question. Yeah? Okay, here's another one. A pope does not have to be a cardinal. A pope can be a priest. Father Paul Kramer will be the next pope. This came in from one of our listeners. If they were to reach out to you, to ask you to step into the breach, that would be quite a calling.
Yeah, but I'd pinch myself and I'd wake up.
That's funny. Well, very good. There's a lot of, just for fun, pretend like we're watching a movie about these times in the Catholic Church, and how much intrigue is going on behind those closed doors now in the Vatican? How much plotting would you guess? Or has it already pretty well been decided what they're going to do? The story about trying to force him to resign today was kind of interesting.
I can't remember the name now, but I remember years ago, there was a person in Argentina who sent me e-books, three PDF books about Bergoglio. Being that these books were originating in Argentina and they were about Bergoglio, these were people who were much more familiar with the character than I am. So I rather avidly started delving into these materials. And there was a bishop quoted in one of these three books who knew him personally, and said there are two main characteristics about this man's character. Number one, he hangs on to power. He wants to hang on to positions of power. He will not give up power. So
even after he dies. He's going to hang on. Okay. I got the type, the personality type.
So they can forget about forcing him to resign. He's not going to do it unless he's completely more or less comatose, zombified, non-compos mentis. At least less compos mentis than he's been, because he's not been entirely compos mentis to begin with. Then you would have, if he lapsed into full insanity, not the partial insanity that we've seen over the last 12 years, but full insanity, which is to say complete lunacy, not mere idiocy, but pure lunacy. then they could declare that he's lost the papacy, anything short of that, he's not going to give up power.
Is there a 26th Amendment, so to speak? We have one over here where you can declare a president incompetent mentally and remove him. Is there something like that in the literature of the Vatican that allows for such in terms of pope?
The parallel to that in the church is like, I'll make the analogy. The British Constitution compared to the American Constitution. The American Constitution is formalized in a document, the Constitution of the United States of America.
Yeah.
The British Constitution, it exists, but it's not on one document. It's not one piece of paper. It's a collection of laws and traditions, legal traditions and laws that constitute what we call the Constitution of the British monarchy.
Uh-huh.
So that's the kind of thing we have in the church. We don't have a document that issued by a pope that would.
I understand. I get it. Yeah.
Spell out what's to be done under such a circumstance. But there are so many canonists, great theologians and canonists, who have expounded on this point, and there's a consensus among the great theologians of the church that if a pope were to become insane, which is a permanent state of loss of the intellective faculty, the loss of the use of reason, then that would be morally equivalent to death, and he would not be capable of the papacy any longer.
Okay.
He could be set aside, and another could be elected in his place. And I know this goes back to I remember the first theologian who wrote on this that I can think of was a man by the name of Gerson, a bishop who lived in the 1400s. So this question has existed for a long time in the church, and so this opinion, which has become something of a consensus of canonists and theologians over the centuries, is rather firmly set in what we would call the equivalent of a constitution in the church.
All right. Interesting. How about the element of intrigue right now? Deals being made, whisperings in the hallways. What do you think?
Of course, that's going to be going on. That is always going on when the popes are.
I would think.
Near there.
Yeah.
But
well,
it's hard to say exactly what's going on, because what is being discussed behind closed doors is not really something that's reaching the public ear.
I was hoping you might have a whistleblower somewhere that could sneak some information out. If you hear of anything, we'll
see. After the fact. So we can expect stuff like that after the fact. But usually at times like this, it doesn't leak out too quickly.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, very good. So what are they telling the faithful now? Well, they're telling them that the Pope's got double pneumonia, he's not doing real well. And what kind of talk would be given to the average congregation? Don't worry, we'll have a successor should Bergoglio die. And not to worry, everything's fine. I guess the bigger question is, how much in lockstep have the church officials around the world been with Bergoglio? Are they supporting him and his really awful decisions and policies in some cases? Not good.
Well,
are they accepting him? I guess
there are many who are accepting him, and there are a growing number who are not. This is what makes it interesting, because it would not be the first time if rival claimants mm-hmm. to the papal chair are elected. Then again, Bergoglio himself has tempted God by speaking of God as the God of surprises in a bad way, and God may prove him right, but in a right way, not in Bergoglio's wrong way. Yes, the surprise is going to be for the Bergoglians, that God will perhaps work some wonder, something that we didn't expect, and maybe we will get a good and true, valid Catholic Pope. I would hope so. Some people formulate the idea in their mind that it's impossible for a proper Catholic Pope to be elected because Bergoglio has appointed all these bad cardinals as electors.
Right.
And but the thing is, that kind of thinking is worthless. Like I said, the majority of cardinals back in 1130, they elected an anti-pope. The true pope was Pope Innocent II. History can repeat itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Interesting. Have you received any input from the really remarkable programs that that you've done here? We've tried to bring a lot of information out, and I'm sure that they are listening to what you have to say. You would be, along with Vigano, probably the lead voice in the real Catholic Church. I would think you have a lot of clout. Have you heard much from people who do listen? Have they commented about some of the things you've said and pointed out over these many programs we've done? Because you have led the way.
I know there's a good number of Catholics who listen to what I have to say and value my my thinking in these matters. I'm not the only one, though. There's not just Archbishop Vigano and myself. There's a growing number of others who are
good. Well, this
making
is good
their contribution.
Hear. Good, very good. All right, so 88, hospital, 8 days. He dies tomorrow. What happens? Give us a lot of people don't. They're not Catholics. They don't know. Give us the process. If he were to pass tomorrow, what happens?
The Camerlengo is going to the Cardinal Camerlengo will organize.
What is that? That's a group.
That is one man, who takes over the governance of the Vatican, and okay. Oversees the organization of the cardinals would organize the conclave to elect the next pope. And that's all prescribed in law, how that is to go about.
Who is this fellow? Do we know?
Yeah, but I don't recall his name at this moment. I've been reading it, but it escapes my memory right now.
Right.
It's not really that important because everything is set in black and white in canon law how they are to proceed in electing a pope.
Yes. Okay.
So they will follow those procedures, presumably. But how that will play out is another question. Especially if they elect someone who is notoriously a defector from the Catholic faith, someone who is so. Someone who is so obviously, notoriously apostate, like Cardinal Marx, to give one example, or Tucho Fernandez himself, another.
Tucho! That guy bothers me, I'm telling you.
A Catholic cannot take such a man seriously as a pope because he's not he can't be a pope. Such a man is not capable of holding the office of the papacy.
In what regard? According to church doctrine or according to his mental competence?
According to church doctrine, according to what is the unanimous teaching of theologians is that a person who is notoriously and obviously a heretic, one who is opposed to the true apostolic faith of the Catholic Church is incapable of holding the office of the papacy.
Yes,
and it was already in the 1600s. A theologian by the name of John of St. Thomas, who examined this question, and he said that among the theologians, it is unanimous that such a man is to be removed; that he cannot hold that office. He pointed out in what manner he's to be removed is disputed It's not that's not unanimous. But what is unanimous is that such a one cannot be pope.
Well, we need to send the Swiss guards after him. Get him out of there.
So in such a scenario, if they elect some clown like this Tucho Fernandez, there will be too many, not just lay people, but priests, bishops, cardinals, priests, bishops, cardinals will say, no, that's too much. We can't accept this. This is a bad joke, and we can't accept this. This man has spoke. It's gone too far. This is turning into a circus. And, well, in fact, it's been a circus for the last more than 10 years. But it's going to be even worse of a circus than what we already have. And at that point, you may find a rupture where there will finally be a separation of churches, the Catholic Church from the Synodal Church inaugurated by Bergoglio.
Would we expect a successor to pick up the ball and continue moving in the same general direction that the Bergoglians have been moving? Would that be a logical expectation? The deck has seemingly been stacked to ensure that. They'd have to pick a loyalist, a Bergoglio loyalist, I would think, with the way they've stacked it. I'm just watching from the outside, so I don't know.
It would appear that that's what they will do. But then again, we can't be sure. There have been too many surprises in church history for us to judge prematurely in this matter.
I like surprises sometimes. This could be interesting. Could be very interesting. So, okay, let me go back to my question. If Bergoglio should go back down home tomorrow, what is the process, again, of naming a new pontiff? How long? Just for our listeners, they don't know. A lot of them don't know.
I don't know.
I don't need the exact date. I don't need the exact date, but just give me a general screenplay of what happens. You mentioned the one guy comes in, according to law, pretty much takes over, sets up the mechanism. Anything about that process that you can share that would be interesting?
Weeks, I think. It was like late September when John Paul I died, and it was in October when... I think the 16th or so of October when John Paul II was elected. So it was just over 2 weeks, and it's more or less that's the time frame for electing a pope. So it shouldn't take longer than that.
Right, here are a few items. When a pope dies or resigns, for our listeners, the governance of the Catholic Church passes to the College of Cardinals. It goes to the College of Cardinals. Cardinals are bishops and Vatican officials from all over the world, personally chosen by the Pope. So when I say he's stacked the deck, there you go. Recognizable by their distinctive red vestments. Following a vacancy in the papacy, the cardinals hold a series of meetings of the Vatican called General Congregations. They discuss the needs and the challenges facing the Catholic Church globally. They will also prepare for the upcoming papal election, called a conclave. Decisions that only the Pope can make, such as appointing a bishop or convening the Synod of Bishops, must wait till after the election. In the past, they made arrangements for the funeral and burial of the deceased Pope. In the past 15 to 20 days after a papal vacancy, cardinals gathered in St. Peter's Basilica for a mass invoking the guidance of the Holy Spirit in electing a new pope. I think the Holy Spirit was away when Bergoglio was chosen. Only cardinals under the age of 80 are eligible to vote in a conclave. They are known as the cardinal electors, and their number is limited to 120. For the conclave itself, the cardinal electors process to the Sistine Chapel and take an oath of absolute secrecy before sealing the doors. So they lock themselves in, I guess. They vote by secret ballot, processing one by one up to the Michelangelo's fresco of the Last Judgment, saying a prayer and dropping the twice-folded ballot into a large chalice. Four rounds of balloting are taken every day until a candidate receives two-thirds of the vote. See, they use paper ballots in it. Why can't we? All right, never mind. The result of each ballot, each vote, are counted, allowed, and recorded by three cardinals designated as recorders. If no one receives the necessary two-thirds of the vote, the ballots are burned in a stove near the chapel with a mixture of chemicals to produce black smoke. When a cardinal receives the necessary two-thirds of the vote, the dean of the College of Cardinals asks him if he accepts his election. If he accepts, he chooses a papal name and is dressed in papal vestments before processing out to the balcony of St. Peter's Basilica. The ballots from the final round of voting are burned with chemicals producing white smoke to signal to the world the election of a new pope. So there you have it.
Now we can only ask the question, will things follow according to the script? Or in all the backroom plottings, have they prepared another script?
See? Yeah. The other question would be, how do we write in Father Kramer? How do we write in? We have to have the people's ballot, right? Who do you want for Pope? Then we could start a movement. Now that would be fun. Deliver them to the front of the Vatican and dump them off. Big pile of ballots.
There are a couple of names.
You don't have to give anything up if you don't want to. It's okay. Don't worry.
I don't think I want to mention the names at the present time.
No.
But there are even a couple of cardinals, not just like Archbishop Vigano, who's not a cardinal. I can think of a couple of cardinals already who would make very good popes.
Really? There are still some left in there. Good. So Vigano is a possible. He would kind of be viewed as a Donald Trump kind of a pope, I would think, coming in to clean house, like Trump is apparently trying to do. He's pretty popular, I would think. He's got a lot of notoriety, Vigano. What did Malachy predict for the Pope? That's a question here. Let's see if I can get this answer to come up, and I'll share it with you. Okay. What did Malachy predict for the Pope? Answer.
Well, there's
no, not you answer. I mean, I've got an answer here. A prophecy of the popes is attributed to Malachy, which is claimed to predict that there would be only 112 more popes before the last judgment. We know all about that. Go ahead.
There's the prophecy of St. Malachy, which we don't know if that document has been tampered with, if we have the complete full document that as it was first written by St. Malachy.
Uh-huh.
If what has reached us could be somewhat abbreviated for all we can judge. We don't know for sure.
Uh-huh.
So Malachy does not say how many popes there are going to be. He just gives a line describing future popes. Whether there's something missing there, we don't really know. So there was another Malachi, of course, with the former Jesuit, Father Malachi Martin.
Yeah.
And he read the third secret of Fatima. So I tend to think his judgment holds great weight, because the secret of Fatima, of course, is more recent than a document found a few centuries ago in the Vatican Library that could have been tampered with over the centuries. So we don't know what the original document contained in its pristine authenticity. But what Malachi Martin said was that there would be this series of popes, and there would be one of them would be completely under the power of the devil, and we know who that is.
Yes.
And he said that one will be the last of the series, this what we call in history, what in church history is now termed the conciliar popes, the post-conciliar Vatican II popes, that the last one is going to be this heretic. And I asked Malachi the question myself when I said to him, I've studied the message of Fatima,
right?
And what I could glean on the secret of Fatima, and it appears to me that in the secret, it is revealed that there will be a heretic who will be elected pope, a heretic who will be an anti-pope. And Malachi's reply to me was, "Were it only that."
Oh, interesting.
So yes. So he confirmed my worst fear about the secret of Fatima, which would be that there would be a heretic who would be an anti-pope, who would usurp the chair of St. Peter. Huh. And that man, Malachi said on another occasion, would be the last of the series of these conciliar popes. So there's going to be... It's not going to be just one more heretic holding or usurping the papal office.
Okay.
Either God's going to work a miracle and there's going to be a Catholic pope, or else there's going to be such a visible division that it's not going to be just one more post-conciliar heretic. There's going to be perhaps a breakdown of governance in the church, like foretold. Mm-hmm. Blessed Anna Maria Taigi spoke of that the chair of Peter would be vacant, for there would be no pope for 25 months or more. Well, we've just passed the 25. We've gone just past the 25 months now. We're in month 26, I think, right now. We're approaching the 27th month, I think.
That's very interesting.
With the death of Benedict XVI. Then there was St. Ignatius of Santia, who foretold a vacancy that there'll be rival claimants to the papacy for roughly 3 years.
Well, if that's correct, we got 3 years of tumult ahead of us, potentially. That's interesting.
So, taking into consideration the prophecies of not only the secret of Fatima, what Malachi Martin said about it, and what others who have read the secret have said about it, but what the saints like Saint Ignatius of Santia, what Blessed Anna Maria Teresa have said, we can synthesize from that a judgment that the Church, as we have known it since the Second Vatican Council, is about to undergo much more upheaval and division. And it's not going to be a clear-cut case of a one man in the Vatican being universally accepted and ruling the entire church, because that situation has already been breaking down. There are enough voices in the church and in a hierarchy and a growing number whose eyes are opening and who understand that this man Bergoglio is not a pastor of the church, but what Saint Francis of Assisi foretold would become of the church one day, when he said that there will be one who will be uncanonically elected, who will lead souls to perdition, because he will not be a true pastor but a destroyer, and we have seen that in Bergoglio.
Oh yeah, that does seem to fit very quickly. One last question. Where is it? Which pope was fired? This is throughout all Catholic history. And the answer is Pope Benedict XVI. I wouldn't call him fired. I would call him overthrown and removed and then held prisoner. So whoever wrote this, I think, is understating the issue.
Well, Pope Benedict the 16th, he actually, in an article or interview, he actually pointed to, not by name, but he made it very clear in his words, one of his predecessors in the first millennium who underwent the same kind of treatment, a similar kind of treatment,
right.
who withdrew from the governance of the church until matters could be cleared up, and he left it in the hands of the emperor to make a decision, and that emperor, fortunately for that pope and for the good of the church, chose that he should be reinstated as pope, and then with the backing of the emperor, he regained his governance of the church. I don't remember the name of that pope, but there was another pope also. I can't remember the name, though, because I've studied these things. I've written them down, but I can't remember them off the top of my head.
We're out of time, Father Kramer. I have to say we have to say goodnight for now. We're watching. Let me know if I need to know anything on this end, and we'll talk to you soon. We'll get you on. If this pope should matriculate out of here, we'll get you on perhaps sooner than later.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, my friend.